At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Robin McCarthy, and I am an Ear Hustle listener. This episode of Ear Hustle may contain content that's not appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
It's actually a portrait from my shoulders up. One of those pose pictures. And I'm maybe like 2. And I have very bright eyes. And I have a nice smile. And it's really reminding me of how much love I felt at that time. My favorite thing was to ride on Dad's shoulders when we would go somewhere. You know, like every year we would go after the Rose Parade to where the floats were, and I would always sit on his shoulders and observe everything and see all the scenery. And this picture reminds me of that. There's real contentment in my face. Yeah, of course, I wish for her a different life, you know, the young person. I'm trying not to cry. It's a good thing to hurt this way.
This is Leslie. She's in her 70s and in prison at the California Institution for Women in Southern California.
I'd first emailed Leslie in January to see if she'd be willing to talk to us. She wrote back and said she would, although she admitted she didn't know quite what a podcast was.
Yes, how you doing? This is Erline, and I'm going to introduce you to Nigel Poor. Nigel Poor, that's Leslie. Leslie, Nigel.
Hey, Leslie. Leslie, nice to meet you.
Yeah. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Good to meet you, too.
Yeah.
I'm pretty nervous, and...
Don't be.
So do you want to talk first?
Oh my God, Erline, I was nervous too. You know I have phone phobia, right?
Yes.
This was not easy for me. My hands were sweating.
No, definitely. Leslie is different than a lot of people we talk to on this show.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, she's been in prison a really long time.
Oh yeah, over 50 years. And Erline, we have never talked to anyone on the show who's been in prison that long.
Nige, that's longer than I've been alive.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. When she first went to prison, Nixon was president. Do you even remember who Nixon was?
All I know is 2 fingers.
Exactly.
And a criminal.
Exactly. Leslie's been in prison through 10 different presidents. And Erline, that is a freaking long time.
After that first call, we got into a routine. For 5 months, she'd call us several times a week, close to 50 phone calls, each just 15 prison minutes long.
It was interesting scheduling her with Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We always had to make sure that we were near a phone because there was no way we were going to miss a call from her.
Nah, and she was very punctual.
Early, I would say.
We wanted to talk to her because we wanted to know what it's like to spend that much time, all of your adult life, in prison.
So today on Ear Hustle, Leslie's story, trying to build a meaningful life behind bars.
I'm Erline Woods.
And I'm Nigel Poor. This is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia. Growing up, Leslie had this kind of picture book early 60s childhood. You know, she lived in Southern California in the suburbs. It was all sun and fun. They had a pool. It just sounded like something out of a TV show, really.
Right. Her family was close. They were liberal folk music types. Into music like, I don't know, Nige, like what?
Oh, like the Weavers, Pete Seeger, you know, like, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer.
worked, and then we would go to things that were called fruit nannies, where everybody was sing along with everybody. Have you ever heard of those?
Yeah, of course.
No.
Where a bunch of people go, and everybody would sing and clap their hands.
Sherry, Leslie, you know we're going to ask you to sing something for us now.
Oh, God.
Can you...
Well, there's always daylight come and me wanna go home. Hey, something.
Hey, oh, totally.
You know that one.
Yeah, see, I know that. I know that one.
Did you know that song?
No, just that little part. You said, daylight come and you want to come home.
Yeah, and then you scream out, Dale. Yeah, and you go,
Dale. Dale. Yep.
And make it really loud.
When Leslie was a little kid, she had this fear that would keep her up at night. I mean, all kids have something, right?
Oh, totally.
Leslie's fear was that one day she'd just be snatched up and taken away from her family by some strange man.
Like a boogeyman right out of a movie.
When I would walk down the street at night, and our streets were suburban, you know, so they were pretty empty. But I would run full speed to my parents. One time on this one street, when I was walking back to our house, I'd go pick up our milk bottles. There was a small dairy down there. And this guy stopped me and asked me where's Peck Road? And I stood on the side and I yelled to him, and he said, come a little closer, I can't hear you. So I dropped the bottles and I took off, you know, full speed. So maybe it came from that, you know,
wow.
The fear that I had just escaped.
Leslie did well in school. She had a lot of friends, and she was elected homecoming princess twice.
But when she was 14, her parents got divorced. Leslie started rebelling. She started doing drugs, first weed, and then she got into LSD.
When she was 17 years old, she got pregnant. Her mom insisted she have an abortion.
I was determined not to, and they were illegal in those days. But I turned against her very strongly after the abortion.
Mm.
She was not aware of how much damage it had done to me. That's really a painful time for me.
People have to remember, abortions were illegal. So it's not like you went to a clinic or a hospital.
No, it had to be arranged secretly, and there was so much shame and stigma around it.
Do you ever think about how different things would be if you hadn't had that abortion?
I used to, you know.
Yeah.
I used to. Every now and then I do, but, you know, it's so far away from what life ended up being. And, that was what really led me in a different direction. It just kept leading down a path I couldn't see, you know?
Yeah.
I called Mom and I said I was dropping out, that she wouldn't hear from me again, that I was going to just go away.
Leslie stopped going to school and started hitchhiking around California.
In the summer of 1968, she was crashing with friends in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood of San Francisco. A friend invited her to take a pilgrimage to meet her guru on a ranch north of L.A. That guru was Charles Manson.
3 weeks later, Leslie moved to Spahn Ranch to join Manson and his followers.
As Leslie tells it, this is the period of her life when she completely lost touch with her old self, her relationships with her family, any vestige of the person she used to be.
Everything that I had been taught was being represented in the opposite, which for me at the time, because of my feelings, that Mom totally turned on me, you know, I was very receptive to letting go of the institutions that we're raised on, that make us civilized.
And
I, at that time, I only cared about acceptance in the group and acceptance by him.
Yeah.
And I just surrendered. So when he was talking and carrying on, I believed him. I felt that I was welcomed and I fit in.
Yeah.
I think that at certain points in people's lives, they can be susceptible.
Yeah.
To undue influence. And, you know, it really hit me that I didn't have an older person I was confident enough.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
That I was confident enough then to talk to. That really hit me.
No.
Are you there?
Yeah, we are.
Did we lose her?
Hello? Yes, we lost her.
In August of 1969, Manson and his followers committed 7 murders over 2 nights. They killed complete strangers, basically at random.
The first night, they went to the home of actress Sharon Tate. The second night, they killed Rosemary and Lino LaBianca at their home.
Leslie wasn't there the night of the Tate murders. She was back at the ranch.
But she was among the people Manson picked to go on the second night.
Another member of the group stabbed Rosemary LaBianca to death. But Manson's instructions were for everybody to take part. Leslie was told to stab the body, which she did, multiple times. Earlon, this murder was a huge part of my childhood. I can't express enough how much this was in the news when I was growing up, and it seared itself into my brain. I was actually really afraid of these women and of Manson.
I was born in 71, so I seen the movies later. That's how I knew about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the thing. There was a book about it. There was a movie about it. You just couldn't get away from it. I mean, it was in the news for years.
Leslie was arrested at the end of 1969.
She was tried along with 2 other women who together became known as the Manson Girls. In 1971, all 3 were sentenced to death.
How would you describe who you were then?
I was a very weak individual. I had no independent thoughts, and when I did, I criticized them because that meant I wasn't completely loyal to the group and to him. I was also torn and afraid of facing what I had done. You know, it's not like I didn't remember the crime, but as I sobered up and understood and began to understand, because it's a lifelong process, really, you know, finding ways to live with taking someone's life. I remember I would start to have more sober flashbacks, and I was afraid of being overwhelmed by them, you know. And I remember the psychiatrist at the time telling me that your mind gives you what you can handle, you know, and just start letting it come.
I don't want to ask you for details, but can you just broadly say what was coming up in your mind that was hard to think about?
The house, the murders. You know.
A year after Leslie was sentenced to death row, there was a big shift. The Supreme Court of California actually abolished the death penalty.
Of course, it didn't last. It was reinstated just 1 year after that.
But during the period that executions were outlawed, a bunch of people on death row had their sentences changed, including Charles Manson, Leslie, and the other Manson girls.
They all became lifers.
The real change came when the death penalty was abolished, because that hadn't been part of what Manson had talked about. I think it was easier to not deal with what I had done. And when the court abolished it, then it was, oh, I'm going to have to live with what I have done.
It sounds like what you're saying is that you felt death row made you feel accountable and you could accept it. But when you got off death row, it opened up this whole nother life that you weren't sure you should have or weren't sure how to deal with. Is that what you're saying?
I was relieved, mm-hmm. you know, that it was abolished. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that the abolishing of the death penalty gave me a huge responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To atone.
Yeah.
To learn to live with what I had done. And a lifetime of living with the murders.
After this phone call, we got an email from Leslie. Somewhere inside of me, I realized I would have to answer for the murders of Mr. and Mrs. LaBianca. I would have to answer for my disrespect of the judicial system and answer for the fear society felt because of me. At the same time, I felt like I was given an opportunity to create a new life where I would do my best to not harm people and be as good of a human being as I could. It would be the beginning of amending for all the harm I had caused. Eventually, Manson's crime started to fade from the headlines. In Erlon, to me, this is the part of Leslie's life that I really wanted to focus on. I was just so curious about, you know, how do you rebuild a life knowing that it's probably going to take place entirely behind bars? Like, who do you become? How do you live with that guilt? Mm. And how do you get yourself back?
Right. Leslie spent the first 4 years of her prison sentence basically in isolation. She and the other two Manson girls she was in prison with were kept away from the general population.
Leslie says what she remembers from this time is a feeling of like a void.
If someone would say to me, what's your favorite color?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have one.
Mm.
What's your favorite this or the other? You know, I didn't have that. I became anorexic. And I didn't even really know that that's what I was doing, but I lost a tremendous amount of weight. And I was down to 98 pounds.
Oh.
And I weighed 145 pounds. So the administration and the medical department were going to start taking action if I didn't eat more. And I think it was just depriving myself. You know, anyway,
yeah.
Meanwhile, a small group of people around Leslie was trying to help her return to the person she'd been before she met Charles Manson.
It was the effort of a lot of people, like the associate warden, my mom, my dad, the officers. You know, when I would get my 1 hour of yard, I would sit and talk with the officer. He would talk about life, you know, a life that involves car payments and things like that, you know, to regather me into the day-to-day world that people live. He, I think, helped ground me. You know, it probably today would be considered, you know, inappropriate, but I think at the time it was a group of administrators and other people that just wanted to really focus on helping me get my mind back.
Leslie's mom came to visit, and the two of them started really talking again.
And Leslie's mom came up with this really good idea. She started bringing in boxes of family photographs for Leslie to look through.
Yep, the ones from growing up, like she was telling us about before.
Right, and they were this really simple reminder of reality, a reality that was very different from the twisted one she'd been living in.
I noticed that I lived my whole life by saying, well, this was before him, this was during him, this was after him, and I was fragmented, you know?
Yep.
I didn't want to live my life like that, you know, I wanted my life. It was a really slow process. It took close to 3 years. Oh. And I didn't even know that my mind was really moving away from all of Manson's rhetoric and his philosophies and all.
Eventually, Leslie found she'd gotten so far away from the whole Manson way of thinking that when she heard people talking about that stuff, it was like a foreign language to her.
And at some point, two of the people that had lived in the group came to the isolation unit, and they started talking all of the language that was used at the ranch. And I don't know it anymore. I can't remember it, and I'm glad for that.
Yeah.
But they started kind of spewing all this stuff. I was listening to them and I realized, oh man, I'm nothing like you. I'm not into your philosophies, your words. And at that point, I knew that I no longer had the thinking that I had come to prison with.
We have 60 seconds remaining.
Oh, crap. Leslie, we'll send you questions for Wednesday.
Okay.
Is that good?
Okay, good. Yeah.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, you guys too. This was really tough, you know.
Yeah.
I'm having compassion for who I was, you know, and it gets to me. Well, it's been a real rough go. You know, self-forgiveness.
Yeah. Did we lose her?
Five years into her sentence, Leslie was transferred to the main line of CIW. Her world totally changed.
She went from this very quiet, isolated environment to all the noise and energy of a prison yard.
And you know that's chaos.
All day long.
I was very nervous when I first came to the main yard.
What were you nervous about?
How the people would accept me, how the women would accept me. We were told, I don't know if it's true or not, but we were told that the other women in the prison didn't want us in the main yard.
Mm.
I remember when I turned the corner and saw the yard, how full of life it was. The main yard just looked like a lot of freedom, and it was huge, and it was a little scary. I would dread going to the dining room.
Why did you dread it so much?
Because of the huge amount of curiosity and being stared at and the discomfort. I had a couple friends who really made a point of me walking in alone. It was important to them that I go and just sit at a table. They felt that the message would be that I am not hiding.
Mm.
You know, that I am there. Okay, I better get off. It's over my time.
Okay. We have 60 seconds remaining.
I'll talk to you on Monday.
Definitely.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello?
This is Global Chainlink. You have a prepaid call from...
Leslie?
An inmate at the California Institution for Women.
So, Leslie was there, on the main line, where there was more freedom.
But it also meant that she had to face the full reality of spending the rest of her life in prison.
My mom, she's a very loving person, but she also was very clear on what I was facing for the rest of my life. And at one point when I began to try to find ways to make myself a victim, she was very clear, you know, you put yourself here and you need to figure out how you're going to live with it. From the very beginning, she was a power force to help me figure out how to do a life sentence. You know,
what?
She did it with love, you know,
yeah.
She did it with caring, but making sure I found ways to live with what my life was becoming, which was prison for a really, really, really long time.
Education became really important to Leslie. She got a bachelor's degree and a master's, and she started teaching other incarcerated people, becoming a mentor to many of them.
And beyond her education, she also really got into what she calls handwork, making clothes, doing fine beadwork, watercolors, all kinds of creative stuff. I mean, she was engaged all around.
And all the while, she stayed in touch with lawyers who were working on her case. And then, in 1978, Leslie got some good news.
That after the break.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Dial 5 now.
Here's Leslie. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello.
Thank you for using Global Tail Link.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Leslie. Hello.
How are you guys?
We are well, and I'm just a little stiff, but I'm okay.
He's been roller skating like roller crazy. Yes.
In her emails to us, Leslie would give us these little glimpses into what her day-to-day life in prison was like and how these phone calls were affecting her.
Oh yeah, Earlon, I was always so excited when you told me there was an email from her.
Like, here's one we got from her this one time.
You know what I'd like to be doing? You know those little boats you tootle along with your feet on pedals? They're usually in small bodies of water like Echo Park. Yep, me and the ducks, keeping each other company.
And another time she wrote, speaking with you guys has really given me back some spunk. I was starting to slump a bit.
Went to a farewell gathering this afternoon. Did a little dancing. It was fun. I always break into the old school. I really like the two-step, where you do a lot of side-by-side spins, like the swing. But everyone that can do that is in a walker now.
Every time I hang up, I remember something or a story to tell. There was an event during the time we could wear our own clothes when Teddy Pendergrass was coming to perform for the women in the auditorium. I was on close custody, so I couldn't go out at night. I sat in the day room and watched the women walk by as they went to the concert. I couldn't believe it. It was like they were going to the Academy Awards, formal, with spike heels and all.
I remember after one of those emails, we had a phone conversation where you told her you'd been picking up roller skating again. And Erlon, of course, I wanted in.
Come on. Nigel finna get her some roller skates. I seen her little flower. You know, she got some little flower designs she's trying to get.
So maybe someday the three of us can go roller skating together.
Oh, man, I'll have to have a lot of pads. Jeez, you know. One ball and wrap. I'm Humpty Dumpty.
We'll hold you between us.
We'll bubble wrap you up.
Well, I saw a video of Erlon skating. He's actually pretty good.
No, look. See, the problem with me is I'm a daredevil, right? And I'm not that young. I don't have that young body no more that can take that abuse.
Looks like you're about 30
in
your
30s. I'll be 50 in August.
50?
Yeah, wow. I'll be 50 in August, so, you know.
Wow.
But I act like I'm out here 22, because I got a theory, though. I got a theory. And the theory is I spent 27 years in prison, so if you minus 27 from 50, you're probably going to have 23. So I have 23 street years, so I'm only going to be 23. When Leslie get out, she's going to be 21.
Okay, but Leslie, let me
bubble wrap. Yeah.
Erlon, I love those chit-chat days where we didn't have an agenda, where we could just talk.
Just chop it up, talk about whatever, listen to her tell us about what she likes, what she enjoys. It was cool.
Yeah, I mean, because when we started this, I couldn't imagine how we were going to do a complete story over the phone. I mean, we usually are sitting across from somebody and you develop a connection really quickly. But over the phone, obviously, it takes a while to break through that. The way you're constantly interrupting each other and that voice coming in all the time, it's freaking awkward.
Yeah, and each one of those calls was like only 15 minutes. So as soon as she accepts and you get to talking, you're on a timer, you know, and you got to get past the, hey, how you doing? You know what I'm saying?
And, oh, I know. And there were so many things we needed to ask her about, including the 6 months she spent as a free woman in 1978.
After 7 years in prison, Leslie's appeal lawyers finally scored a victory. Her conviction was vacated on grounds that she had received ineffective legal counsel in her first trial.
Leslie knew her next trial would likely send her back to prison, but for a short time at least, she was out on bail. What was it like to have that freedom for 6 months? I mean, it seems like it would be a blessing and then also a curse because you have to go back.
It was wonderful. I remember going out on a pier and smelling, you know, the life of the, I don't know what they're called.
Mussels, oysters.
Mussels.
You know, them feeling the ocean. You know, everything was so alive. I pretty much knew that it wasn't going to be permanent. So I really held on to as much as I could. You know, I knew that I would be going back to prison.
What was the best part of being out?
I think the best part was holding and hugging my relatives. And I was equally aware of the fact that I had made it where the LaBianca children would not be able to do that. So everything was kind of bittersweet, you know?
Yeah.
I always was very aware of what they were not able to do. And I think my family was too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. In July of 1978, at the retrial, Leslie was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree felony murder and was sent back to prison, where she's been ever since.
4 years later, Leslie came up for parole. She was denied.
The board cited the seriousness of the murders and told her she still lacked insight into the crime itself.
3 years after that, she came up for parole again and was denied. The board denied her again in 1986 and 87 and 89.
In all, she's been denied parole 16 times. E, it's weird. I've met guys inside San Quentin who have served less time for murder. In fact, some of them have been on our show.
Yep. We've talked to a guy who served 19 years for double murder, another did 31 years, another got out after 30 years, but Leslie has been in for 50 years.
Yep. The notoriety of Leslie's crime puts her in a whole different category.
All the other lifers that were doing the time I had done were leaving and I was staying. I had determined that I was just going to spend the rest of my life in prison. And I understood that I needed to make that a good life because people that live their lives to win the lottery and they never do, only half live. So I determined that I was going to have to find a way to have a full life here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Leslie followed up in an email. I worry sometimes that I'm institutionalized, but I don't think so. I think I'm someone who turns lemons into lemonade. It's how I survive. If I spend too long on what these years have been, it breaks my heart. If I keep moving forward, it's easier to deal with. I'm so fortunate that I still have a kind heart and I'm not consumed by anger. It keeps me alive.
How do I have a full life if it's here? How do I, at the end of my day, say, you know, this ended up being a good life?
Yeah.
Regardless of where it is, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm at CIW and we have grass when it's not a drought. We have trees. We have flowers. You know, we have beauty around us, like birds, all different kinds, like the geese fly overhead on their way to the reservoir, not far from here. There's so much. Mountains, we have mountain ranges, you know. So I focused on those things. Being incarcerated is a, if you use it right, it's a lifetime of introspection, you know.
Yeah,
it's a different kind of life, but it's certainly one that is a life. One thing that I was able to see that I hadn't really thought about before is how my guilt, in a healthy way, that my guilt overlays everything that I do in my life. I measure it by, you know, how will this affect the La Bianca family? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought of it with Mom, you know, that I always remembered that Mrs. LaBianca's children did not have her, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. It comes up a lot when we talk. And
Yeah. It's always there.
Yeah.
It's very humbling to have participated in something so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that has always been hard is when people say, "Oh, are you one of them?" It's like, oh God, one of them. That's been a real common thing to have happen. Back in the 70s and 80s, I didn't know how to handle it. You know, I became embarrassed and ashamed and very self-conscious, you know. Now I just tell people, oh, I don't talk about that. That was 50 years ago, and I don't go there with people.
The first wave of obsession with Charles Manson had faded in the 70s, but it never totally went away.
And in the early 90s, it started to reemerge.
A few bands had put songs of his on their albums, and kids were wearing T-shirts with his face on it.
One of the major networks was wanting to do an interview. And at first, I was really hesitant because I didn't want to cause more pain to the relatives of Mr. and Mrs. LaBianca.
Mm-hmm.
But when I realized that people were actually kind of redefining who he was, you know, I felt that I really wanted to talk about who he was and his abuses and what he really represented. I guess somehow he found out that I was considering, and he somehow managed to get in a letter through the prison system. And he was, threatening me and being very abusive if I did this. And when I realized that he really didn't want me to do it, then I thought, no, I need to go ahead and do this and say it. So that's how that happened. Mm-hmm. But when I knew it was something he really didn't want, then I knew I needed to do it.
Oh my God, how did it feel when you got a letter from him?
It was really awful and creepy. And I believe I turned it over to the investigators in the prison. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to, it wasn't okay. You know,
no.
It wasn't okay that it made it through the system into me.
It just reminds me of when someone's in an abusive relationship and a person shows up at their house. You know, like it's such an invasion of something you thought you got away from.
Yeah.
Good. Leslie, why do you think people were continually intrigued with him?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
How did you learn that Manson had died?
A friend of mine actually came and told me. I guess it was on the morning news or something. But anyway, she's the one that told me he had died.
And what were your thoughts or feelings behind it?
I felt a sense of relief, you know, because he was a human being that really, he was just mean and cruel, and he continued to hurt people with his words that had lost so much of their lives in mourning the victims.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
He was just I felt it was important to work through hating him, because when you hate someone, they're as alive in you as if you had another emotion for them, right?
Yeah.
And so I worked very hard to just remove him out of my immediate life. And all he represented was the hardest part of my life to live with.
I think we're going to get cut off pretty soon. Are you still there?
Okay. Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you.
Earlon, some of these calls were gutting. I mean, they knocked me out. I felt so bad.
Yeah, I mean, they went deep, you know? I mean, just to places you just didn't expect, or, you know, especially her.
I mean, we had to ask her really hard things. And, you know, this is the other thing about the phone calls. If we were talking in person with somebody, there's this way of showing, you know, empathy and comfort. On the phone, it's cold.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a hard way to interview a person, because I can't see you, see how you respond and see your facial. I don't know, you know, when to jump in. It was a trip, you know.
It was hard. You had to use your voice, you know. That's definitely the only thing you have is your voice.
And, you know, after those calls, you know what I'm saying? If they cut off or whatever, I get an email from her explaining, you know, like, you know, that was a hard call, you know, but she appreciated it. You know, it made her look at something different.
Yeah, yeah.
In April of 2016, after 45 years in prison, Leslie went before the parole board a 17th time.
And this time, the board granted her parole.
3 months later, California Governor Jerry Brown reversed the board decision, denying her parole.
The governor's reversal meant simply that I would be staying in prison and go to the board again. And I don't know, maybe it's because the governor is further away, you know. And I try not to judge those that make those decisions, because that's not my place.
You would think that must have been so heartbreaking after all those times to finally be granted parole, only to have the governor reverse it.
But Leslie looks back at that moment, the fact that the parole board had granted her, as a really positive thing.
Glass half full.
The greatest affirmation I ever had was when the board finally found me suitable. But that was an outside affirmation. The board, after close to 20-some hearings, to say, "We recognize who you are today," was just amazing. And I think they were very courageous people to do that. It was more the recognition of who I have become. And that meant absolutely everything to me, you know. It came with the recognition that I am not my past, you know. That I've worked very hard. And it just having it acknowledged, it made me, I think, more self-assured. My voice became stronger after that.
4 times now, Leslie's been granted parole by the board, then had it pulled by California's governor.
Twice by Jerry Brown, twice by Gavin Newsom.
The first time the board granted you your parole, did you think it was going to get taken by the governor?
I didn't. I tried not to think about it. You know, I watched other people getting the opportunity to go home, but I know I'm not. That's not how I'm treated.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. That's just, you know, I certainly hoped you would, but it didn't happen. When the reversals come, I just know that I need to continue with my life, and that, you know, hopefully someday I'll be able to get out of prison.
How long ago do you feel you got to the point where you were rehabilitated?
Oh, man. We have 2 minutes left.
Oh, we can save that one for the future.
Yeah, you know, it's a process, isn't it? You know?
Definitely.
I don't really have a specific time, you know? Like, First there was breaking off from the group and Manson's thinking. And then there was coming to terms with the realities that I would say it's been a long time that I have felt it, you know. But every time the board would say unsuitable and look into this and look into that, I took it to heart, you know, and I followed through. And so there's layers and depths of who we are as people, you know.
Right.
But I have been working and feeling like I've been rehabilitated for decades, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. You know, rehabilitation is familiarizing yourself with what was before, right? Rehabitate. Oh, I'm going to have to get off of the phone. Oh, man, can I talk to you about that on Wednesday?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, I think she's gone.
Oh, okay.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded. To accept this call, say or dial.
Like
thank you for using Global Tail Link.
Hello.
Hello, Leslie.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm good.
I have a question for you right now. How the heck did you eat? You ate two pizzas and a dozen donuts?
I don't know. So, isn't that amazing?
Yes, it's impressive.
In 2 days with a dozen donuts.
It's really impressive.
So in one of the emails, she talked about eating 12 Krispy Kreme donuts and two whole pizzas that she picked up at a prison food sale.
Yeah, I don't know how she did it. How did she get that all in?
I don't know how I did it.
I know how you did it.
One piece at a time, right?
See, you was looking at them donuts like, I don't want y'all to go bad, so I'm going to take care of y'all before y'all even get to that point.
Yeah, exactly.
How long did it take you to eat a dozen donuts? Like one day?
2 days.
No. What I did was I had a system.
Which is one pepperoni,
one supreme, and then a donut. And then I would go out in the backyard and I would walk like 10 times around our little backyard, which is 1,000 steps. I waited like every 2 or 3 hours.
Okay.
And then I would come back in and then I would eat another in a pattern.
It was basically an eating cycle?
Yeah.
Erlen, could you do that in 2 days?
Ooh, 2 days. That might be a long time. I probably could have that. She said Krispy Kreme.
Yes.
She said Krispy Kreme. I probably would have knocked that down in a day and then just felt guilty for the next 2-3 days.
I'm glad to hear.
I'm kind of fasting right now, and it's just sort of my metabolism, you know?
Yeah.
Menopause has given me a little bit of a belly, but...
Erlon doesn't want to hear the menopause conversation, but bad he has to.
I like education.
You should hear it, Erlon. You should.
I should. Like I said, I like education. I don't pass education up.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's, nature is no longer calling out to procreate, right? So your needs and desires totally change. I attribute a lot of my comfort now to menopause.
Oh, tell me about that.
So now I'm comfortable, but I'm adjusting, I'm adjusting to a face that, you know, like I noticed under my chin, I'm starting to get the kind of hang thing that Dad had. You know, it's all indicators that life is getting shorter, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting the way you say it, that it's indicators of life getting shorter. I've never heard someone express it that way.
Yeah.
If
I'm fortunate enough sometime to leave prison, I just don't want to be someone that represents that old age is a deterioration, you know?
Yeah.
I let the younger women kind of see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Like, I don't intend on dyeing my hair or, you know, I'm not going to compete. I was going to say with like 30-year-olds, but more like 50-year-olds, you know?
In the 50 years you've been in prison, I mean, how much time did you spend looking in the mirror and just pondering your face or your physical being?
You know, it depends on the lighting. Like in my cell, the light's kind of dim, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll get in a mirror where the sunlight's coming in and it really shows, and that's kind of freaky. You know,
yeah.
To see the amount of wrinkles and stuff. It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah. I asked Leslie to get a hand mirror and sit quietly for 5 minutes and just look at herself and think about what she saw. This is actually an exercise I do with my students in class.
And this is what she wrote.
The mirror I looked into is the 12-inch square on the wall. In it, I see a face that I'm beginning to get familiar with. Gone is my brown hair and youthful gaze of insecurities and self-criticisms. Yet, while the external changes take getting used to, the internal conversation is more affirming. I see in my eyes understanding and acceptance, sorrow and regret. I see comfort in living a life of amends, but under it all, there is a yearning to be near my siblings and friends. The ache sits right beneath the surface of my quest for redemption. Then I turn from the mirror and decide what I will do today to make my life meaningful.
That's really a difficult exercise to do.
I think what made it difficult for me was I never really talked too much about the aching to be able to be with my, you know, brothers and my sister and their children, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or all my friends, you know?
Yeah.
I tried to not let that sit too close to the surface.
Earlonne, it was really interesting over the months we talked to her, how our relationship changed with her and we got so much closer and it was easier to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just one thing I knew I had to share with her and I wrestled with it. I was so nervous about it.
How nervous?
Enough that it kept me up at night.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a lot of things I've been wanting to say, but I've just been pondering how to say them. Okay, so I'm 58. So I grew up in the 70s, and growing up, I hate saying his name, but he was a big part of my childhood fears. And
yeah,
so, you know, it just loomed really large. I remember that movie that came out, Helter Skelter, and I remember reading the book when I was way too young, and so. I just found it so confusing. I mean, he scared me. And I remember just being so confused by these girls that looked like me. How could that happen to them? And so before I even got the chance to know you, you were part of my growing up experience. And so when I got the opportunity to talk to you, it wasn't like I was afraid or anything like that. It's just that it came with a lot of experience. And so it's uh-huh. just been really special to get to know you as an individual and to see who you are and, you know, to consider you a friend. So I just see it as a real blessing that I've had this opportunity. It makes me really happy.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's really hard being the boogeyman. And, you know, that means a lot to me that you have shared that with me and told me, you know, and that it turned out to be a good experience. And I'm glad you told me that, you know.
Well, I didn't want to make you feel bad. But, you know, it's, you know, anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't make me feel bad. It makes me feel, like there's hope.
Yeah.
In one of our last calls, we asked Leslie how she imagines life if she gets out.
Well, I used to think about it a little bit more than I am right now. You know, I don't know the world out there anymore. My plan would be for simplicity, mm-hmm. you know. I feel like I've gotten used to living with very little, and I don't want to get caught up in possessions. I also think a lot about time alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like in nature, where the only sounds I hear would be the ocean, you know,
mm-hmm.
or the trees up in the mountains. I would also like to be able to spend some time in the city, you know. I don't know why, but I love the rainy streets of a city when the lights are glistening off of the street. I love that. I don't know why that always comes to me after all these years, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny, the images that come, you know.
Yeah.
But the same thing comes when a screen door is being shut, you know, in a farmhouse, right?
Yeah.
It's
funny. I always think about a screen door shutting. That seems so comforting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And peaceful.
I just wonder about, how do you think about the idea of home? And has prison become your home?
No, I don't think that this is home like the way I would think of a home. I make the most of it. But I don't know how to explain it. Home has feelings of other things for me, like
yeah.
family and childhood friends, and, you know. So I make the most of it, but, you know, home for me is really a memory.
What kind of threads do you imagine putting on when you walk out? Like, what's the first thing you want to wear?
Probably to begin with, just, you know, my jeans and a t-shirt and a pair of Converse to start.
High top or low top?
Probably I'd start with the... I haven't worn high tops in a long time. I'd probably pick high tops.
You don't imagine when you get out that you could fall in love and have a relationship?
You know, that's not a priority for me. I just yeah. want to be in love with life. I have so many of my friends that I want to spend time with, you know. I just don't picture myself having someone... where are you going? When do you think you'll be back? You know,
this call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
For me, that's too close to incarceration, and, you know, I'll be reporting to a parole officer. I don't want to report to another human being.
Earlonne has a lot to say about this.
Ooh, you on the right track, Leslie.
Yeah, I've thought about this, you know.
You said something that really caught my interest about how you just want to be in love with life. Are you in love with life now?
Oh, yeah. Like the spring flowers are coming up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I'm so in love with their variety and the colors and the sweetness of, you know, and people, you know?
Yeah.
Just who they are, you know, and what they're doing, and good books. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot in life to be crazy about. And when I imagine myself out, you know, smelling the ocean and all of that, I just think there's plenty out there that I could be in love with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We have 60 seconds remaining.
Okay.
I feel like we still have so much to talk about.
All
definitely.
Right. And I'm going to miss you guys.
We'll be here.
Yeah.
No way. Okay.
No.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
All
me
right.
too.
Have a good weekend.
Okay.
You have a good weekend too, and I'll reach out to you.
Bye bye.
Leslie goes up for parole again in November 2021.
Ear Hustle is produced by me, Nigel Poor, Erlon Woods, Rasan New York Thomas, John Yaya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace.
This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams, with music by Antoine, David Jossie, and Rashid Zinneman.
Amy Standen edits the show. Shabnam Sigmon is our digital producer, and Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle would like to thank Acting Warden Ron Broomfield. And as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
This is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is a collection of independent, listener-supported podcasts.
Some of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
Erlon, that was our last episode of the season.
Vacation, vacation, vacation.
You always say that, and it's just not ever going to happen.
I get like 2 days of vacation after. We'll be back with a new season at the beginning of September.
With much more from inside San Quentin.
Including one project that we've been working on for over a year now. It's going to take us deep into the archives of one of the most contentious moments in San Quentin history.
And we're going to be doing a 30-day challenge that just might require some listener participation.
In the meantime, check out our website. We've got our Ear Hustle merch there, including that fly, soft, cushy hoodie.
And some of the proceeds from the merch go to support Mount Tamalpais College, formerly known as the Prison University Project. And Erlon, you know I love that organization.
Yep, higher education is the shiznit.
Yes, it definitely is the shiznit.
And if you want to hear what else is going on during the summer, sign up for our newsletter, The Lowdown.
So, see you all in September.
Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation, a relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus, it's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Erlon, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Erlon, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Erlon?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes.
Radiotopia.